Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're going to love today's episode, and you'll want to listen to the whole thing because we're talking about steroids, we're talking about different exercise techniques, we're talking about the mindset of food, we're talking about the mindset of exercise, we're talking about even kratom, which is a new herbal substance that can help you with opiate addiction and a bunch of other stuff like that. So we cover this broad range of things and a really powerful ending for the show. So tune in for the whole thing. It's just a fun interview and you're going to enjoy listening to it.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day is that researchers have found some bacteria in your gut that can help you hack your athletic performance. We already know that your microbiome affects your energy metabolism, your inflammation response, and your neurological function. And funny enough, all of those are going to impact your athletic performance. So it isn't that hard to hypothesize, but no one ever measured this before. So these researchers said this is going to matter for endurance, recovery, and probably mental resilience, which is a core part of what matters to me at Bulletproof. What they found is that in exceptional runners, there's a type of bacteria that breaks lactic acid down after extreme performance. So they just have so much of this present that they do that. Now, in my case, I hack my own lactic acid levels by exercising with compression stuff and ice on my arms because I want more lactic acid in my brain as a signal. But endurance runners have too much lactic acid, so they grow bacteria to help them dump the stuff, which is incredibly cool. Does that mean you can be a better endurance runner if you take the right stuff? Maybe if you feed it, because it's about what you eat that feeds the bacteria. So if you're gonna take your probiotic, you better eat something they can also digest. They found another kind of bacteria that breaks carbs down and fiber down, and we all have those, but they found different ones in endurance runners. Typically, if you eat Bulletproof, you're gonna break your vegetables down into propionic acid, which is one of the short chain fatty acids you can burn for fuel. So even though you're eating the right kind of carbs, they actually turn into fat before you use them, which is kind of cool, only if your bacteria work right. And they figured out in the study, at least they hypothesized, that the individual microbiomes of these crazy athletes probably took decades to develop. So it might take you a little while to do this if that's what you wanna do, but it helps us understand as biohackers, like, this stuff really matters. What we don't yet know is how you can really precisely do this sort of thing. I'm pretty hopeful that my friends over at Viome, who now have the most detailed and precise map of what's going on in your gut that's ever been done for humans, that they're going to be able to do that. And you can head to viome.com to find out stuff about that, V-I-O-M-E. And you should look at the Bulletproof Radio episode with Naveen Jain, the CEO of that, who also is mining the moon for minerals. Kind of a cool guy. And before we launch into the show,
quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us, and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
If you haven't had a chance to check this out, you probably don't know that Bulletproof makes coffee pods. So if you have something that takes K-cups, we've got your back. I'll tell you, you grind your beans. The Mentalist is my current favorite. That's like our medium dark roast. You grind them and you brew your coffee. You're going to get the very best coffee. That's how all the experts do it. But if you're in a hurry, you're in an office, or you're in a hotel room, the coffee pods can save your life. So you're drinking the clean coffee that doesn't cause the crash that can happen from drinking a lot of the coffee that's out there. So check that out. If you didn't know it and you've got one of those machines, we've got you. All right. Today's guests are Mark and Chris Bell. Guys, say hi.
How you doing? I'm Chris Bell. I'm a filmmaker. Mark Bell, powerlifter. Right?
There we go.
And an entrepreneur.
You guys stole my thunder here.
But right. Okay.
So, yeah, that's cool. I'm hoping that people learn to recognize your voices, because it's tough when you're just listening if I've got two people at the same time. So I'll try
you
to call.
You sound similar sometimes, too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So Mark is a world and American record holder, power lifter. About 300,000 people follow what he does and online on Instagram and all. And he could clearly crush me in his bicep right now if he wanted to. Although I might be able to crush you with my calves. I've got
yeah, you got
calves.
Some big calves.
I can't wear
all
pants.
All shaved
too.
Up and sleek too. I might.
No, they're just they're electrically stimulated. Oh, it pulls the hair off when you put electrodes on there. It's kind of painful. You built Super Training Gym, which Men's Health said was one of the 30 best gyms in America. So your guy knows a thing or two about picking up heavy things.
Yeah, I've been lifting since I was 12 years old, and I'm going to be 41 in December. So I've been doing it for a long time.
And you also invented this thing called the slingshot, which I was just playing with, right. Which is something you can use for changing your physiology during push-ups. I just did 15 push-ups with this strange band across my chest.
Right.
So that when you're at the very weakest part of the push-up, you need less muscle activation, which is a good thing because it protects your shoulders. So yeah. It seemed like a good move.
It's a product I created because I tore my pec several times. Being a competitive power lifter and pushing the envelope the way that I was, I went from bench pressing over 600 pounds to 700 pounds to an eventual 854 pound bench. And in my training, I started realizing that handling these amounts of weight with both my arms pinned behind my midline of my body was causing a lot of stress in my pecs. And I eventually tore both of my pecs, a total of 3 tears to come up with the invention. So I always say I'm probably the only patent holder that can claim that I've torn my pecs to make my product. But the product is a supportive upper body device that allows you to handle more weight for more reps and more sets, which gets you more volume, gets you more work. Also can allow you to do a lot more work on the eccentric, the lowering portion of the exercise. And in addition to that, it's helping you with better form.
So it's a cool hack, and we're not going to talk about that the whole show. We have no affiliate or any of that kind of stuff. It's just a guy who knows a lot about exercise and has done some cool stuff in the space. And on my other side here, we got Chris. This is the guy behind the documentaries Bigger, Stronger, Faster, Trophy Kids, and Prescription Thugs. These are big name documentaries. You've seen one on HBO?
HBO was Trophy Kids, and then the other ones are all on Netflix.
Okay. So, in fact, I think most people listening have probably at least seen the name Bigger, Stronger, Faster. Like that's something almost everyone's interested in, at least one of those things, right?
Right.
So, great name for a movie.
Thank you.
And you interviewed a lot of people around the world about this quest for these different things, and just how do we improve people?
Yeah, like 10 years ago, I was obsessed with getting stronger. I was still obsessed with powerlifting, and I was obsessed with the fact that I had this moral dilemma right in my own family. It was exhibited right in my own family. We have an older brother, Mad Dog. He actually passed away after we made Bigger, Stronger, Faster. But to go back, the reason why I made Bigger, Stronger, Faster is I was in the middle of two brothers, and I wasn't sure what the steroids were doing to them and how it affected them. And, in the end, I wanted to make a decision, like, is this something that I'd want to get into, or is it something that's really bad? And that's sort of what the movie was about, and that's sort of where it came about from. Now, 10 years later, we have different goals, which we'll talk about.
It's actually kind of cool. I want to talk about steroids and see what you guys think about
sure.
that. I've been just very openly using testosterone since I was 26 years old.
Oh, my God.
And the reason for that is when I was 26, my mom had more testosterone than I did naturally.
Oh, no.
Which was a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Right? So when I started taking bioidentical physiologic replacement doses, not powerlifter doses, it's like, wow, like someone took the gloves off. My brain started working again. Right. So people say, oh, that's a bad thing. I'll just tell you, when you're 70, if you have the testosterone levels of a 30-year-old, you're going to like your life. And if you have the testosterone levels of a 70-year-old that are normal, you're probably not going to like your life as much. That's just how it is. So when we talk about steroids today, we're going to separate the anti-aging kind of, we'll call it medical use of them, versus the I want to do something my body can do. Right. I want full control of my biology. This is a tool set for that.
Right.
So we'll talk about that, sure. But we're going to talk about nutrition, keto, powerlifting, and exercise techniques. And I want to pick both your brains because you both have interesting perspectives, and your brothers, you grew up together. So it's got to be a good story you're going to tell us here, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
We're nuts.
So let's start here, Chris. You have a nickname for your little brother here. What's that?
Yeah, his nickname was always Smelly. And the reason why was...
You probably noticed when I came in.
I say it in Bigger, Stronger, Faster. When we were young kids, he would just be out in the yard playing all day, be running around. He was just always active. And he was always sweaty and smelly. And so he just sort of had that
nickname. I hate to take showers. You know, I was at that age where I didn't like, 11 to 13 or so.
He had that nickname and it kind of stuck, no pun intended. And then he went into pro wrestling when he was like in his 20s. So Mark actually wrestled. We actually found a guy named John Cena that we roped into pro wrestling. And Mark was battling him basically every week and he needed a name. Mark Bell just didn't fit. So we started calling him Smelly and be like, Smelly versus John Cena, right?
Was like, that was your pro wrestler name.
That was it.
The thing is,
I was the kid that was picked on too much. I couldn't take it anymore.
The only person that actually really liked the name Smelly was Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon got it. He was like, this is Vince's
Most
son.
Guys like, your name can't be
Everybody's
smelly.
Like, your name can't be Smelly. It needs to be like Macho Man or cool, Ultimate Warrior. Like, it needs to be something cool. Smelly's derogatory. And Shane McMahon was like, no, that's it. He was picked on. And that's where it comes from.
Wasn't one of the Spice Girls like Stinky Spice or something?
Maybe. I don't know. Scary?
Sporty? Scary. It was scary. Yeah, scary. It wasn't Stinky. Sorry. Scary. I didn't mean to do that. But it's one of those things where it's a slightly negative thing, but it's also for wrestling. What the heck?
Right.
Who's going to forget Smelly?
If
right?
the negative that's motivates cool. you, then I guess it's worth it, right?
That's cool. All right, Mark, you said you were 12 when you started lifting. Is this because you were called Smelly? Like, and I'm going to say something that's going to piss off some of my bodybuilding friends. There's something that happens, and I say this as a guy who used to weigh 300 pounds. And I'll also tell you, I never really felt, I always felt alone, and I never felt very safe. Like there's some kind of looming threat that I right. couldn't identify. So there's two different ways you can compensate for that. And this is all unconscious behavior.
Right.
One of them is you get big because you're fat. And me, I had hormonal problems. I had toxic mold poisoning, but I also had some emotional stuff going on there.
Right.
And the other thing you can do is you can be like, I'm going to be invincible. I'm going to get big. Right. I can pick a truck up. Is that what was getting you going when you were 12?
Mainly it was my two older brothers that got me into lifting at first.
Okay. Just because you were modeling older brothers who were doing that.
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
It was a positive motivation.
I was probably about 12. And they were already showing me a little bit of strength training. They were showing me, my oldest brother, Mad Dog, was trying to show me how to squat, but I couldn't handle the weight being on my back. I was like, shit.
You're 12,
that?
Right?
I was like, ow, that hurts, And he's like, you're being a, So I had to kind of, I wanted to use that pad that they make for the squat, and neither one of those guys were letting me
do
that.
We actually call it the pussy pad.
We threw
it in the garbage.
I was like, they wouldn't let me use that. And so, what happened was I was playing with my football, my favorite football. I had a New York Jets football. We're from New York. I'm throwing the ball up in the air, just playing with myself as usual. And a guy yells to me, says, hey, Bell, throw me the football. I turn around, and it's a family, friend. He's actually, a frenemy. We all hate him. He hates our family. We hate his family. And, flashback to, early 90s, late 80s. This guy's got the mullet. He's got the acid wash jeans.
Nice.
Got the fanny pack. He's got, for some reason, he had biceps. I'm not sure why, but he's 17 or 16. And so when I turn around and I see this guy who's kind of jacked with a mullet, I've seen him around before, and he's like, hey, throw me the football. I was like, oh, yeah, it would be cool to throw a football around with somebody. So I throw him the football, and he proceeds to catch it, turn around, and kick it as far as he can. He booted it into the woods, and I went to search for it and was never able to find the football.
Aww.
But from that moment on, you can flash to a Rocky montage of me training in our garage, banging out some curls and some bench press and banging out some push-ups. And at that point, I was kind of a fat kid, too. So once I started to recognize, it was years later, but once I started to recognize that you can really change your body through some of this, then I really fell in love with it.
One of the things that can happen when kids lift heavy before they're before their bone growth plates fully seal is it can actually stunt bone growth.
Right.
So my kids are always like, especially my son is like, I want to go do the ARX, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, actually, you can do one exercise once a week
right.
because you could take inches off. And also right. there's pretty good evidence that until you're 18 or something,
right.
you probably don't want to really go down that path. Were you lifting really heavy, or you were just lifting?
Yeah, for me, I started lifting heavy pretty early on. I was able to go into some competitions and break some, like, New York State records and stuff like that. I don't know how much, you know, real science there is behind the bone thing. I don't know how much it affected me. Maybe it did rob
you're,
me.
You're the taller of the two brothers by about 4 inches
maybe,
or something.
Maybe it did rob me a little bit, but I do but know that
actually,
when you play.
When we were younger, I would squat, you know, 600 pounds every single week. I had 600 pounds on my back.
Oh, so that might have
affected me. Okay.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't strong enough to even hurt myself at that
when
point.
When we first got into it, mm-hmm. I was way stronger than him. I was always 100 pounds ahead of him and everything.
I was 4 years older.
Yeah, bench press, whatever, but I was 4 years older.
Got it.
And I was like, he will never catch me. And so he would bench 355, I'd bench 455.
Cool.
You know, he'd bench 430, I'd bench, you know, 500 or something. And it was always like just trying to push against, you know.
Well, it's brotherly competition.
Stay ahead of him enough. And then there was a point where the switch flipped. He's like, I'm moving to Ohio and I'm going to start training at Westside Barbell. And then like, and that with like, he just started learning. Accelerated learning is what we call it, you know, learning. He just took off, you know, and there was no catching him.
We'll switch gears here. I didn't do this in the introduction, but you're really open. You're doing a film about addiction, and you spent some serious time as an addict.
Mm-hmm.
When did that start?
So it actually started when I went to college.
Okay. It was after your bodybuilding time.
Yeah, well, I didn't really recognize it.
I was powerlifting. I didn't recognize it, but the first time I ever drank alcohol was 16 years old. And my friend dumped me off on the front lawn because he didn't know what to do with me. I was so drunk.
I remember that.
And my parents went crazy.
It was scary.
And like, it was the first time I ever drank or whatever. And I told my dad 20 years later, I said, I should have known that day. I should have known this is done. Like, this isn't for me.
Not a lot of 16-year-olds have that level of self-awareness. The prefrontal cortex isn't wired yet, so don't blame yourself.
And it didn't start fast. It started really slow. I was the kid. I was a powerlifting champion in high school. Then I went to a community college, and I was like still competing in all these powerlifting meets. And then I went to USC Film School. And when I went to California, and I was sort of like on my own for the first time, and sort of allowed to party, I was like, "Oh, this is fun." And then girls came into the equation, and the girls liked to drink, and it became this thing where I traded my powerlifting career for like a social life,
right.
You know? And for me, I think that was probably a bad move. Like, I just sort of kept going down that path. But what really happened I wasn't ever that bad. I would binge a lot, I should say. But I wasn't ever really that bad until I had my double hip replacement surgery at 33 years old, which was like 10 years ago.
Is that a result of bad powerlifting form? Like, what
That's
happened?
A result of genetics. My father had hip surgery at 17 years old, and Mark never had the same issues that I had. I had arthritis,
pain,
so bad.
Nothing like he had.
Yeah, I couldn't walk ever since I was young. I could never run. You know, I've never run a lap in my life because I can't. So
Got
it's
it.
Like, you know, I had to deal with these things all the time.
And you had chronic pain going on then too. And chronic
pain. A lot
pain,
of chronic pain.
I had arthritis in my knees since I was 14, and it's gone now, has been for 10 plus years. But yeah, that just you're used to hurting all the time. So that makes you more likely to
The other thing too, right? is, though, yeah. all the things that I've learned in the past, like, year are all anti-inflammation, how to get rid of it. And it's like every single thing I was doing caused inflammation.
Yeah.
So
what changes did you make in the last year?
First change I made was just going on back to a ketogenic diet.
Okay.
It's something that when I was powerlifting, it always worked. I have a friend named Ron Fedko. He's actually the head of computer science at Stanford now,
mm-hmm.
but he was a powerlifter. He squatted over 800 pounds at 198 pounds. He was the most amazing lifter I've ever seen. And he just said, he came up to me in Gold's Gym one day, and we were training. He said, "You're just way too fat. You weigh about 240 pounds, and you're like, you know, you're like 5'6". He's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know. I just thought I was powerlifting." And he's like, "No. You got to get down under 200, or you can't train with us anymore." And I'm like, "I don't know how to do that. I've never been under 200 since I was in high school." And he's like, "Get ready. You go write this down. Go get a pen. I'm going to tell you how to get down under 200 pounds." And I'm like, "Okay." And I come back, and I got a pen and a piece of paper. He goes, "Write this down: red meat and water." And he walked away.
It's pretty high protein.
He walked away.
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" So he's like, I want you to do that. So I did that for the next like 2 weeks. I had a meet coming up. And what do you know? I slipped right into the weight class underneath me, and I won the meet. It was a California State Championships. I'm like, man, like there's something about that, right? Like, you're right. It is probably the wrong version of
you were in ketosis, but you were in a high protein ketosis.
Yes.
Which as a power lifter, you were using the protein.
Yeah.
But you know, over a long period of time, a high protein keto, if you can pull that off, man, it's going to chew up your kidneys, right?
Ron also had an interesting twist on his diet where he would allow for some fruit.
Yep.
So he said, if you felt like having carbs, he's like, eat a couple pieces of fruit.
Well, so after
fruit was like,
I should say after the meat, he put me on a more balanced diet where he added in like a bunch of vegetables and whatever. And so I was eating more of a cyclic ketogenic diet that actually went with my workout plan, which is really unique. So on like Thursday, I was allowed to eat some fruit, just a little bit, and some carbs, just a little bit. And then we would deadlift on Friday, and deadlift was like always the most brutal, you know, day. So we had a little bit of carbs the day before, and sort of made sense on paper.
It does make sense off paper too. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, Bulletproof diet's a zero carb diet. I'm like, what? Did you read the book?
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not, because the body will use some carbs. And I give my kids, it's summer. You're supposed to eat ripe fruit in summer. So if they have a piece of fruit after dinner, great. That's fine with it. But if they have six pieces of fruit a day and you blend it into a smoothie, that's just not a good move.
I'm a huge fan of the ketogenic diet, but I'm also a bigger fan of being more open-minded. And I'm a huge fan of like Bulletproof, because I try to introduce people to the ketogenic diet in the softest way possible.
Are you saying that because you're on my show? Or
like No. That's the reason why I wanted to come here. There's a reason why we're actually... You said you don't do this often where you get people here. There's a reason why we wanted to come
here. Just don't feel like you have to plug it. No. That's what you're actually doing, that's cool.
Well, what I'm telling you is I've switched over to telling people... I love Rob Wolf's stuff. I read a lot of his stuff. So I actually recommend more Bulletproof, Wired to Eat. Like, hey, read these books. I think they'll be really good for you to figure out what you need in your diet rather than just trying to go straight keto, because it's really difficult for a lot of people right off the bat.
It is tough. And
it's not sustainable necessarily for a lot of people, unless you have a disease, right? We talked about that.
If you have epilepsy, it is amazing how easy it is to stay in ketosis, because seizures suck. My mom had epilepsy most of her life, and so I've seen that effect firsthand. So it's a strong motivation. You have like autoimmune inflammation. If you're not in ketosis, it hurts all the time. Mm-hmm. All right, those are very strong signals. But I find that I'll go to, like, I gave a keynote at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. So there's a room full of 3,000 doctors. Yeah. They all know about ketosis. A third of the talks are about ketosis for aging. And I raised my hand, how many of you know about ketosis? You know, and of course, everyone. How many of you are in ketosis now? And like 20 hands go up. I'm like, okay, we got a room of like the most learned people here who know it's good for them and they're not doing it.
Sure.
And what I found too is that unless you live in a cave, if you have a job or you have a family, staying in ketosis all the time religiously, it's as hard as being a raw vegan, which I was for a long time too, right? It is a huge commitment, right?
Yeah.
So like you said, the soft entry, and that's one of the things that I really worked on.
But also I feel like there's a sustainability there. If you tell people like, look, you can never eat fruit again, you know?
And it's not true.
It's really hard to somebody stick to that diet, right? So I like that it's a little bit more open-minded and allows you to have these things, because we've gone both ways. Like we've done the strict keto diet.
Done all kinds of different stuff.
And
what's the goal? You know, if the goal is to have someone start to lose some weight, usually when you lose weight, you become healthier. And you mentioned at the age of 26 having your testosterone messed up, but I think you've also mentioned being very heavy.
Oh yeah, 300 pounds sucks.
Yeah, at a very young age. So like maybe the foods you're eating are contributing to the poor. Who knows? Genetically, it's hard to say, but.
Yeah.
Whenever you lose weight, you become healthier. So something as simple as telling someone to get to sleep on time, start drinking more water, just these little things, use some intermittent fasting, use some Bulletproof intermittent fasting. It's like, that's not that big of a change for your diet, because I'm not asking you to really change anything you're eating. Pulling out some, not drinking any more sugar, not drinking any Coke or Pepsi or beer or wine or things like that. Like, there's these small changes that you can start with. And you don't have to be all in from day one.
Yep. You're always going to be on some diet because you eat. So it's just a matter of like, where on the spectrum are you? And one of the big things for me, having tried, like you guys, hundreds of diets, and you know, for me, gaining 20 pounds, losing 20 pounds, gaining 30 pounds, losing 20. So just kind of stair-stepping up, like every fat person ever who's tried to lose weight will do this until they find something that sticks. But the difficulty that you go through there is that once you're not perfect, you're off the diet and then you lose. And when you just reframe that, you're like, no, you're always on a diet. Like, how close to perfect are you? And if you say, I'm only going to be perfect, you've already failed. Because you're like, oh, I had red meat. Oh, but was it grass-fed? Yes. Oh, was it grass-fed organic? Yes. Was it raised by small children? Yes. You know, were they enlightened? Like, it doesn't matter. You can always be more perfect. And screw that noise.
Sure.
That's an eating disorder.
You're going to have a lot of anxiety built up towards that, which is going to not allow you to probably lose fat anyway.
Totally.
That's interesting. They say it's an eating disorder because I felt like for a while, when I first started keto at the beginning of this year, I had an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I had two kinds of eating disorders. First of all, I had a really bad relationship with food.
Yep.
And I listened to Rob Wolf's book, and he's like, that's the problem. You have a relationship with food. He's like, you shouldn't have a relationship with it. It's just there. You know. And he's like, figure out what you need and go get it. And that just opened my mind a little bit.
A lot of the neuroscience stuff that I do, and I run 40 years of Zen, this neuroscience thing for execs, you realize that you're constantly telling yourself a story, and that the nature of the brain itself is it's a pattern matching system that predicts the future. And if the future doesn't match what you predict, mm-hmm. then you notice. Otherwise, it's invisible to you. Like, yeah. It's fascinating, the tricks we play. But the story that almost everyone has about food at some level or another, it's entirely made up, because food's inanimate unless you're eating something that's still alive, which is unusual. So what's going on there is there is no story that's real. It's all you predicting the future. It's all what you're saying to yourself. And if that narrative or that pattern matching system or that prediction for the future is wrong, you're going to look at the food. You're going to predict that when you eat the food, it's going to make you feel loved, or it's going to make you feel safe, or it's going to do something. And it's all bullshit, right? But until you recognize that that's happening, and you can do that in keto, you can do that eating a whole foods diet, you can do that as a raw vegan, and you can do that eating the standard American junk food diet. It doesn't matter. The story is part of the equation.
It's all things you made up. And what I share with people all the time is that you're one meal away from being back on your diet. You're one meal away from being out of it. But it's okay, because if you're going to eat, you're going to eat some chocolate cake. You're going to just go crazy, eat some ice cream, pizza, whatever. You're just one meal away from being back in. That's not a huge, you don't have to beat yourself up over it. Enjoy it. It's done with. Move on.
Well, this is an interesting question for you. You know, as a power lifter, I in the mid 90s, when I was really looking at, all right, how am I going to lose this weight, and having, 18 months in the gym, 6 days a week, half weights, half cardio, not losing any weight. So I really started digging in on all this stuff. And one of the things I read was a book by Rob Fagan called Natural Hormonal Enhancements, one of the first like steroid-free bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And he really introduced me to some of the ideas that I've evolved over these years. And he though had a cheat day sort of thing, but it was different than, the 4-hour work week kind of cheat day where it's eat a bucket of crap. And I used to do that.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of bodybuilders do. But yeah. I found out I'd eat my crap on Friday night. I had this thing in the Bay Area. It was a place called Max's Opera Cafe. And it was a layer of cheesecake, a layer of chocolate mousse, and a layer of chocolate cake.
Just hitting it hard.
Have that, a loaf of bread, and some sort of whatever was on the menu. And you're like, yeah. I'm so happy now. But then I was okay on Saturday, kind of okay on Sunday. And Monday, I was an absolute zombie. But so there's a multi-day effect. And so I just tell people, look, you can have a day where you eat more carbs. Right. But if you just eat crap, you're going to spend 4 out of 7 days of the week recovering from your cheat meal.
Yeah, but I call it a food hangover.
Okay, so I was saying, where did you start with that? Because really, power lifters, guys who lift a lot of weight, spend a lot of time in the gym, they're kind of notorious for I had pizza and beer, but I'm going to work it off. What's your take on that now that you're a little older?
You know, it's very hard, outside the gym, being an entrepreneur and wanting to chase multiple things down at the same time. As a power lifter, as somebody that I wanted to be the strongest person in the world, that was my goal at the time. And to have that goal, to have that singular focus, I had to not even really care about the food that I ate in a sense of getting bigger. So that was really hard to try to detach myself. Now, looking back at it, I could have done all of that in a much smarter fashion as well. I could have used healthier foods, but I intentionally made myself fat. Got all the way up to about 330 pounds. Each 10 pounds I gained, I kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger, even proportionate to my body weight. But once I went from about 300 to about 330, I had diminished returns. And at that point, I was just like, holy shit, I'm just fat. I'm not executing on what I originally set out to do. What am I doing? And you look around at the other powerlifters and stuff, and they're all kind of doing the same things because we got way too deep in something that initially starts out fairly healthy. I'm going to get bigger. I'm going to get a little stronger. Or like a cyclist that eventually turns into a competitive cyclist. It can at some point be dangerous. It can compromise your health.
It'll shorten your telomeres. Those things, as your cells divide, if you have long telomeres, you live longer. And if you do extreme endurance, it feels good. You get the opiate high, but you are probably taking some years off your life.
And then in terms of the actual food and, trying to eliminate that relationship with food was important. I try to share with people, try not to eat in front of a screen, because if you're eating in front of a screen, then you're watching TV and you're just gobbling down food. You're not really thinking about it. You're not paying attention to any of your digestion. You're not paying attention to chewing. So I had to start to really try to really think about what I was doing. I'm like, you know, when I started to lose weight and started to have these cheat meals, you know, we would call it like, it was like a full day.
Well, remember, we used to call it operating from home. Yeah. And we would leave the gym. We'd be done at the gym and we'd go right to Dunkin' Donuts because we lived in New York. We'd buy a dozen donuts and we'd kill them on the way home.
Pizza.
Candy. Everything that's toxic and bad for you.
Yeah.
We would shove in our face that whole day.
Easily 10,000 calories.
And we would gain 10 pounds in one day and then we'd lose that 10 pounds in another day. That can't be good for you. Right. So when you're younger,
it wasn't
like,
fat. Like the 10 pounds was inflammation.
It's a water inflammation.
Like you just got inflamed, right? And that's one thing that drives me nuts. You know, I'll tell you, it says on the cover of Bulletproof Diet, you know, lose a pound a day kind of thing. Well, yeah, you can lose a pound a day on any ketogenic diet for about 4 or 5 days because you're just like, oh, I'm getting rid of inflammation. Ketones are anti-inflammatory. But it's what happens after that where, okay, now I got rid of the water, the inflammation, then is the fat going?
I have an interesting question on that.
Sure.
So, you know, like Dr. Stephen Finney, I was watching a thing with him the other day and he said, I've been on a ketogenic diet for 10 years. My weight has stayed rock solid for 9.
Right.
And as somebody who's trying to get leaner and lose weight, I've been on a ketogenic diet for, I don't know, 8 months, pretty much straight, you know, and my weight is rock solid, like 185. It just won't go down. And I'm like, is it calories? Because then I listen to all these, you know, read all these these books and listen to audio books and people say, oh, calories don't matter. It's hormones. And so what does matter? What am I doing?
Well, it's interesting because if you put someone in a chamber that measures their poop, the calorie count
go.
Of your
Here
poop.
Here we go.
Yeah. Calorie count. You knew we were going to talk about poop. The calorie count of your pee, the heat in the room that you're making. There's incredible levels of detail there. And you can make the argument that calories count, right? The problem is that in the real world, the reason calories don't count, There's two prime examples here. One of them comes from the ranching industry. And I studied a lot of meat production. We have grass-fed collagen protein. I have 3 lambs. I don't know if you saw them coming in the front yard. So like
almost
actually,
ran them over by accident.
Were they out of their enclosure?
Yeah.
So they keep knocking down the electric fence. Anyway, so you guys know I really am an organic farmer here. These guys are witness. So what commercial ranchers will do is they look at something called feed efficiency, which frankly shouldn't exist. So, and this is how fat can the animals get on how few calories? So wait, they're getting fat on less calories? Do they make more money if they do that? Yeah. So they take something that is actually a mold toxin. It's called zearalenone, and it's concentrated into a little waxy pellet that goes in the cow's ear. It's called zearalenone. They put it in the cow's ear, and magically their feed efficiency goes up by 30%. They get fat on 1/3 less calories.
Wow.
Okay, so if that is possible, then it's not about the calories. Like that is point positive. You cannot say it's a calorie equation. Except if you lock the cow or the person in a chamber and you limit calories, they will probably lose weight, but they won't all lose weight at the same rate. Right?
Yeah.
Which is also, wait, how is this possible? And there's some interesting theories about water chemistry, mitochondrial efficiency, all sorts of interesting stuff going on there. So what's going on with you is I would hypothesize that you may have one of the genetic things, MTHFR is a common thing I've written about that I've talked about it. And a lot of times when people don't respond, some of your mitochondrial pathways are blocked. And your mitochondria's job is to take food and oxygen and actually light.
But should I be losing weight or should I be rock steady at a certain weight?
You should be, well, you've got some extra pounds. I mean, you lifted your shirt up earlier.
I can still lose a lot of fat.
Yeah, you probably have like 20 pounds or so, 25
absolutely.
Pounds maybe, would you say? So you play around with the amount of food you eat. There's nothing wrong with eating less calories. The problem is that if you rely on your willpower to eat less calories, you are going to lose. The reason you'll lose is you lose 20 pounds and then you'll gain 30. That's what happens. So you have to find a way to cut the calories back without hitting your willpower reserves. Willpower also takes energy, the same energy that's coming from your mitochondria, the mitochondria that are screaming that you don't have enough energy. In fact, the energy that should be going into your brain and into moving and all that stuff into your muscles, some of it's getting stored as fat when you don't want it to be, and you want that energy to be available. So there is a mitochondrial thing behind weight loss always. Is it your thyroid? I don't know. Have you done advanced thyroid panels?
Actually, I should just be honest with you. I was on, I just hated being fat.
Yep.
And I started taking a T3 for a while.
Yep.
And, you know, my doctor's like, yeah, sure, you can take it, whatever. And I started taking it, and I would actually take more of it.
It's a thyroid hormone. Oh, you
right? And so I lost a lot of weight by just taking T3, right?
Did you stop?
Well, so what happened was I jumped into doing keto, and I'm like, I just need to get off this T3. It's making me sweat a lot. I just didn't feel good on it. Mm-hmm. And so I just stopped at cold turkey. Everybody said, you're going to gain 50 pounds. I didn't gain an ounce. And I still haven't, you know, like I said, but I think that's maybe why I'm not losing.
That's probably why you're not losing. My guess is you were taking too much if you were sweating, but given that you were on it, your body's going to take a while to re-regulate your thyroid function.
And I've been to my doctor since and everything, trying to work with him on figuring it out. We just haven't figured it out.
So you might need a low dose T3 or something like that. And my guess, given your history, like you've got something going on because, you know, it wasn't just the social stuff. Maybe it was all emotional that got you addicted, but quite often there's physiological stuff, like we're self-medicating because there's a hardware problem. I just finished an interesting interview with a guy formerly from USC's neurology department saying like everyone who has these kind of things going on has a traumatic brain injury, either from chemicals or from hitting their head, even as a small child. And, like, that stuff affects your hormones, affects your weight gain. So it's a holistic thing there. And I wish I could tell you, you know, do this one thing. I can tell you that if you can make it so you want less food and you eat less food, the odds of losing weight go up. But if your thyroid's jacked, you'll be just like I was, 1,800 calories, working out, you know, as much as I can every day. Didn't lose a pound. I could bench press more, but sure, I couldn't lose a pound. So you may be in a situation like that, and that's where you got to get your labs. You got to understand what's going on there.
Yeah.
There's also a parasite you can have. And I haven't talked about this. I've been wanting to do an episode on this for a while, but I'll out myself here. So during the testing phase of the Bulletproof Diet, before I published this, I went like really heavy on all the different things I could test, including doing about 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day and just pounding it. But it was very keto when I was doing that. Lots of Bulletproof coffee. And I thought I was going to gain a little bit of weight, and I slept 5 hours or less per night. Like it was ridiculous. And I did this to sort of say, look, I'm going to gain 3 pounds, but the math says I should gain 20 pounds. Clearly the equations don't work. And I actually lost weight. And I felt really good. I did this for 18 months. When I was starting Bulletproof, I was a VP at a big company, and I started Bulletproof. And this is because I was sleeping less, and I was just like using this energy. It was nuts. And people still say that's not possible. I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of just what happened. But during that time, I had this dialed in. It was consistent. And all of a sudden, I gained 25 pounds in about 5 weeks. And I'm like, what just happened? And it turns out I picked up some kind of a parasite. I want to say it was blastocystis. And I was like,
the
what?
Bulking parasite.
Yeah. And you know about this?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. So I was like, what the heck? So I good thing I'm a biohacker. I know the right people. I tracked it down and I took the drugs that kill it, and the weight was gone in like 2 weeks. Wow. But so you could have something like that going on. There's even a virus that makes you fat that comes from chicken. And if you get that, like you're gonna be fat.
Fat virus.
Yeah. So there's weird stuff going on that we don't necessarily know about. That's part of it. So long answer.
It's a great excuse. So I caught this fat virus.
Yeah.
I ate so much chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm getting scratched by chickens. But there's stuff we haven't paid attention to. But you might look at your gut biome. Get the biome test. That's gonna tell you more than you.
That's the next. The next step was after learning as much as I could about the ketogenic diet. Now I dove into the gut biome, and I'm realizing all the stuff that's, you know, in there. And our next documentary, Mark and I are going to make a documentary together, and that's why we're here talking to you too, is we want to explore all this stuff. I never realized that your gut microbiome meant anything. Now I'm realizing it might mean everything.
It means a lot, because there's another microbiome inside you. And I'm supposed to be interviewing you guys, but I got to get in my soapbox for a second here, because this is like...
No, this is great. I love it, man.
I spent a couple of years writing Headstrong and really like...
Great book, by the way.
Thank you.
I did love it.
Just comprehending the mitochondrial thing that's going on. And the way I view the body now is you're a petri dish and you've got a quadrillion ancient bacteria and you're managing their biome. So it's your mitochondrial biome. And that includes the environment around you. And then you have a gut microbiome. And there's actually less bacteria in their gut than there are mitochondria in your body. But there's more bacteria in your gut than there are cells in your body. So if we believe we're a collection of cells, it's one thing. If we believe we're a collection of mitochondria, it's a different thing. So what you're trying to do here is manage your gut biome, because it talks to your mitochondrial biome. And if that communication is disrupted, and you can disrupt it with LED lights in your bedroom, like there's all kinds of things you can do.
Sure.
By, you know, diet sodas and crap like that, all sorts of stuff. So it is a complex thing, but I'll tell you, if you keep playing with it and keep looking at the data and you keep measuring what works and what doesn't work for you, I don't know anyone who can't lose weight on that stuff. But for some of us, like where I was, I'm like, I'm really working hard here. Like every ounce of extra energy I have goes into this, and it's not moving. It can be really frustrating.
Sure.
But you know, you'll get it.
We'll get there.
All right. This is back, Mark, to you. All right. I was reading about some of your training routine stuff, and mm-hmm. you're a little bit insane. So you do
sometimes, yeah.
Hill running. All right, hill running. I've seen that. Alligator tango, a bodyweight circuit. So I teach my kids bodyweight stuff. Chinese self hand slap torture, grape juggling, interval cardio on treadmills. I'm all over intervals. And you recite William Blake poetry backwards in Dutch. All right.
Only when I'm drunk.
Oh, only when you're drunk. All right.
Yeah. So speaking of hacking, somebody hacked my Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
So that's where that information comes
from.
Is
that not true?
It's 100%. Yeah, it's 100% not true.
It was actually me.
Yeah, I know. I read that. Somebody's like, hey, your Wikipedia.
That's where I read it, yeah.
Oh, my God. I was reading. I'm like, who wrote this? Whoever did is a genius. So if anybody's listening to this, you did a great job.
And
it was so funny.
Wikipedia is 99.5% right, they say. So that's the other 0.5.
Yeah, that's the other 0.5.
Wikipedia is interesting, too.
I was like, oh, my God.
There's actually a strong bias on Wikipedia against functional medicine. There's about 500 people who are like the real heavy editors. And it's definitely not an unbiased encyclopedia.
It's influenced.
It's highly influenced. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think we can do better. But there's a lot of almost like Reddit-like trolling behavior amongst people who do commenters. One of my good friends is one of those 500, and you're like, wow, is that really like a lot of like political intrigue and all.
Check your
sources. So basically, guys who are editing a Wikipedia and the friend of mine, you know who you are. You gotta fix Mark Bell's page.
It got a little.
I was like grape juggling. I could see a neurological thing because I actually do juggling on a balance thing. For cross patterning, and I was like,
I don't think I can figure out juggling. My brain doesn't work.
Dad can juggle.
I keep dropping them. So juggling is great for you. I don't know what self hand slap torture is. I don't think I want to know. And I was like, I can tell you, NBC Dateline interviewed me while I'm playing. You saw the robot ping pong table downstairs.
Yes.
So Daniel Amen, you know, the change your brain, change your life guy, who really did change my life. He's like, Dave. He looked at my brain and says, just get a ping pong table. I'm like, really? Yeah. So I have this robot thing, and it'll serve ping pong balls fast. So they've got me on camera. There's like this whole crew and like, you know, stacks of lights and all this crap. And like, we're going to interview you while you're doing high-speed ping pong. And I'm like, okay, can I do this? Yeah. And I got to tell you, as a cognitive workout, being able to pay attention to balls and speak, and I never said or stuttered, which was like my win for the week.
Wow.
But it was, so I was like, okay, maybe really you're like doing hard things.
Yeah.
So whoever wrote this, I'm like, I could almost see this. So you got me, whoever the editor is, that's hilarious. All right, let's talk about community. Because, you know, you run, you know, one of those top 30 gyms.
Yeah.
Or at least you started it. Are you still running it?
Yeah,
okay, absolutely. You're still running it. So talk about community and what that does for just for exercise in general, whether or not it's for powerlifting.
First of all, I think it's always a good idea to enter anything, try to do it with somebody else and put things out in the universe and tell people. If you're going to try something like the bulletproof diet, you're going to try any ketogenic diet or anything like that, I think it's always a good idea to share with somebody else. Maybe you can get somebody else to do it with you. Like, yeah, I'll do it with you. My brother and I, we started the war on carbs a few years back. And we shook hands on it and everything. And it's good to be accountable for things. So at my gym, Super Training Gym, which I started in 2006, what really makes the gym unique, what makes the gym different, is that everybody there has a very similar goal. We all want to get stronger. And we know that if we invest time into each other, that's going to help us get stronger. It's going to help the individual get stronger. So sometimes people will come in there and they'll be like, I don't want to get in anybody's way, because they're intimidated by the weights that we're moving around. But the biggest way to get in someone's way is to not do any work. You know, to sit off in the corner is number one way to not participate and to not help what everybody's doing. So the number one way is to get moving and to work on yourself. And while you're working on yourself, he's going to encourage me to do a certain weight. I'm going to encourage him to do a certain weight. And so we all end up helping each other out. The gym is also free. Super Training is a place that I have... There's no way for me to pay back Super Training Gym. It's like a lab. You know, I've been able to test all my products in there and test my own training methods in there. And so I get so much back from the gym, it's hard to ever repay any of that. But
anyone can just show up, you're saying? Or do you
Yeah,
just like
we, well,
qualify?
We make it we make it a little bit complicated, but yeah, just about anybody can show up. They usually hit us up on Instagram or they'll email us or something like that. And then we just kind of vet them. But any Sunday, anybody can come through the doors and check out the gym. And we try to be open. Like lifting and exercising is hard enough as it is. We don't need it to be harder. We don't need diet to be any harder than it already is. We don't need anything to be more negative than it already is. So I'm trying to create a lot of positivity. And by having that positivity, it helps create a community of people that will literally do anything and everything to not only ensure their own success, but other people's success as well. We're about to move the gym. The gym is in a 2,500 square foot facility, and we're moving to a 23,000 square foot facility. And
wow,
the second that we move, the whole team's going to be like, yep, I'm there, I'm helping. Like, no one's going to be complaining. The last time that we moved, I barely touched anything because everyone's whipping around so fast, grabbing mats and the squat racks and so on, moving everything around.
I see a lot of people. I used to do this when I'd go to the gym. This is, you know, when I was doing my 6 days a week sort of thing. I'd put in the headphones, you know, put on a baseball hat, and like, yeah, I wouldn't make eye contact with them. I'm like, I'm just here to do this. It's sort of the opposite thing. And I was a little bit Asperger's back then, so that could have affected things. But I mean, I see a lot of people go to the gym with headphones, and it's almost like they're avoiding community.
The gym. Exercise is supposed to make you feel better.
Right.
I think everyone thinks I'm going to go in there and I'm going to torture myself and
I'm going to kill it.
I'm going to kill it. I'm just going to, I'm going to beat my body up because it's good for me.
Right.
And yeah, to some extent it is good for you. But you shouldn't be lifting angry. You should be lifting happy. You should be exercising happy. It should be, maybe you don't want to do it every single day, but that's kind of the reason why we have other people there, to make you accountable for showing up, because he might not want to show up on a certain day. Maybe he's down. Maybe his girlfriend broke up with him or something.
Yeah.
And I can pick him back up and say, hey, this is important to us. You know, you've already said this is important to you. You're on a mission to lose weight. You're on a mission to look better and to feel better. Let's make each other accountable. And we can worry about other stuff. We can cry later on. You know, we can worry about that stuff later. But we don't even allow headphones in my gym. You're not allowed to wear headphones. So people can play whatever music they want. They could rage and go as crazy as they need to. But you're not allowed to be off in the corner by yourself. We have to participate in everybody else's workout.
And the no headphone rule, like I was shocked. I was in the gym training because I live in LA and he lives in Sacramento. Like, got headphones on. He comes up to me. He's like, hey, no headphones. I'm like, I'm your brother. Like, he's like, no. Yeah, you're my brother, but you're in my gym. No headphones. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I thought about it. And then when I got off the plane,
able to communicate with
when I got off the plane this week to go, because I flew up to see him first before we came here. And I get off the plane, I'm so tired, and I walk into the gym, and he just hands me a hip circle. He goes, here, put this on, let's go, we're starting. And I wasn't even planning on working out. I'm like, I need to get
we
there.
Get a brutal workout.
I'm gonna take a nap, I'm gonna blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm with Lauren, and he's like, hands her a hip circle too, let's go. And we just start walking around the gym. My hips were, like, I have two fake hips, I could barely walk, I could barely move. That hip circle is so great for just getting your hips moving, that I was like, okay, now that my hips are moving, I'm gonna do a full workout. And we just went crazy, and it was because it was a community, because it was me and my girlfriend and my brother. It just felt so good to be in that zone with them.
A few times during the workout, he said, I can't, you know, and that's fine, because there's going to be stuff that you really struggle with. He's like, no, I'm in a lot of pain. I'm like, well, there's so many exercises to choose from. There's no reason for us to put you through a lot of pain, so let's have you just do this. We do a lot of stuff in my gym that I consider to be immediately scalable, is what I call it. So if we're going to do an exercise such as a farmer's carry, which is just walking with weights, what age group can walk with weights? Any age group can walk with weights. As long as you have the ability to walk, you can walk with a little bit of weight. So maybe somebody only picks up 10 pounds, but maybe somebody else is using 100.
Maybe it's
2 pounds. Immediately
scalable.
It could be anything. We don't need to trade weight. We don't need to switch things out. We don't need to do anything. I have sleds and things like that we use this one thing called the tank, and we push this thing, and it's got these different levels. It's on wheels.
It's brutal.
So everyone's like, oh, this thing's going to be really easy. You jack the level of the thing up, and you push it, and it feels like you're pushing a 5-ton truck. So,
wow.
But I can scale it to anybody. I can lower it back down, and somebody can put it in neutral, and they can just walk with it.
So I got to ask, no headphone rule. This is a bunch of dudes, right? How many women come to your gym?
Yeah, there's maybe about 5 women or so. I mean, they pop in and out here and there, but, you know.
Because that's one of the problems in gyms is I've heard this over and over.
Women are a big problem. I agree.
Not where I was going with that. There's a lot of Bulletproof women who use Bulletproof coffee and they're getting the benefits, but they talk about going to the gym and they're like, if I don't have headphones in, like guys are constantly trying to chat me up. Like I'm here to work out. Like I'm not here to be stared at.
It's a different environment. Maybe you'd say to that.
Oh yeah, our gym is so different.
If somebody hit on somebody, they get so made fun of. Like they would get destroyed.
Yeah, that's not really going to happen much at my gym.
The women aren't coming, right?
They do. They show up quite a bit because we have women that show up on the weekends and stuff. We have people visit us from all over the world, and they still come into the gym. But our guys are. A lot of the women have commented before. They're like, "I really like training in here," and they don't care like if they're wearing shorts or like maybe they're self-conscious about. You know, these girls are wearing these little booty shorts nowadays. And a lot of the girls are like, I would never wear these in a regular gym, but I feel comfortable just wearing like whatever I want.
It's about the exercise in the community.
It's about lifting heavy. But I mean, for the most part, it doesn't really operate the same way a regular gym does in any fashion.
Yeah. So that's a part of the community there. So there might be an argument for headphones if you're in a gym and you don't want to get harassed.
Yeah, I think so. I think there is something to getting a little disconnected. To what, you know, all the other things that are around you and kind of focusing. But I still think you're better off doing stuff with somebody. And if you have headphones on, make it
very challenging. A long time ago, Louis Simmons taught us, owner of Westside Barbell. He taught us, to lift with people. He taught us to be around other people and, like, that kind of thing. And I think, like, he always would say that commercial gyms are a waste of time. And he hasn't been in a commercial gym in, like, 30 years. And I'm like, that's great. And that's sort of what Mark... takes those lessons and goes, yeah, like, this isn't a gym for me.
Think about it. Like, if I said, Dave, let's go do push-ups right now, just against each other. You'd be like, I don't really want to, but sure. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a challenge. Like, and it's a way to get someone exercised, way to get someone involved. And you're a competitive guy. And who knows? Like, a push-up is kind of scalable. I weigh a different weight than you just because I've benched a lot of weight. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win that push-up contest. Yeah. And so, therefore, it makes it fun.
I knew we were going to compete. I put estrogen in your Bulletproof coffee. Sorry, man.
Oh, my God. I felt my nipples being a little bit more sensitive.
When we did our workout the other day, we were doing something as simple as arm circles. And I realized, like, wow, because I have a shoulder issue.
Yeah, we're doing these guys.
I'm going, wow, like, calisthenics. I can't even do that. Why am I trying to bend? Like, my shoulder hurts so bad I can barely do that. So, like, let's do things that are small rather than get hurt.
When did calisthenics become that?
Yeah, actually, we were just talking about that. I listened to your stem cell.
I haven't injected ever.
And you think, boom, it's the way to go?
Life-changing, absolutely.
I need that.
How the old injuries go. And for you, having been an addict, you have chemical damage.
You had a doctor on that does it for chronic pain, I believe?
Yeah, we had, Harry Adelson's been on. Yeah. Kristen Camilla has been on talking about stem cells. We've got Matt Cook coming up here, so...
I just need their info. I'll be there.
All right. No, I'll hook you up afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's becoming way more affordable than it ever has been before. So it used to be like, you know, fly to Germany, like a pro athlete and spend $50,000. It's way cheaper than a hip replacement. We'll put it that.
Yeah. Well.
All right. Now you guys said something else. You said, you know, you're not at the gym to kill it, but you started a site called the War on Carbs. So are we going to ever win the War on Carbs?
You know what? I actually really hope so. My brother and I, we were in Malibu recently. I was out there with my family just enjoying some vacation time. And we were hanging out, and we were pulling out of this driveway. And we saw somebody smoking. Mm-hmm. And he was like, wow, people still do that?
Is that still a thing?
I said, what I want to make my goal is for people to say that about obesity. Like, people are still making these bad choices. People are,
that's still a thing.
It's going to take a long time for the education to get out there. It's going to take a long, but hopefully we can at least start to reduce the number of people that are falling into these traps.
You know, also, with my
children, my son is 13, my daughter's 9. From the time they've been very little, I've been communicating with them about nutrition. And it's never like, hey, you can't eat that or you can't do this or can't do that. I just tell them, you know, too much ice cream can... When they were really little, I would say make you sick. Yeah. As they got older, I explained it more. My daughter's 9. I don't want to like get into her psyche, so I've dropped the subject, right? And with my son, but now they make good decisions on their own.
Yeah. If you start early, it's a lot less work. But I mean, the war on drugs has been an abject failure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah, it's not about like really launching a real war. It's kind of like more we were kidding around, but we're like saying in our own mind, if you're looking at something that has like a lot of carbs, you're looking at a piece of cake. You're like, no, I'm on the war on carbs. Like that's sort of what we're talking about. Yeah. We're not talking about like not eating like little carbs that you're going to find in your vegetables, you know?
That's one of the dangers of even just the whole keto movement right now.
Yeah, it's hard.
One of the guys who helped push keto, because it's been so valuable for me. But what I'm talking about is cyclical, because the immune cells in your brain, the glial cells that like trim extra neurons and provide maintenance in the brain, they actually like carbs. Like they do better with some carbs.
There's something about a keto that I feel like is kind of cultish in a way. And I don't want to be part of something.
It shouldn't be that way.
I want it to. Yeah. I want to use it as a tool.
We shouldn't be throwing stones at each other.
So give me a war on corn syrup. Like, sure. Like let's end that. Yeah.
It's sort of more what we're talking about. A war on bad. You know, like
well,
the things
I'm taking
that are
it one person at a time too. Getting one person at a time to commit to walking a little bit more. Getting one person at a time to take care of their sleep a little bit better. Hydration.
Well, he started
that food
on his Instagram, hashtag 10-minute walk. And we have all these people losing weight just because every time they eat, they're going on a little bit of walk afterwards. You know
how hard is walking? It's easy.
I can even do it.
That's impressive given the two hips.
Yeah, we walked this morning for an hour, right?
Yep.
Now, I want to talk with you about your documentary, Bigger, Stronger, Faster. And you've got a line in there and you say, is it still cheating if everyone's doing it? Mm-hmm. Is it?
I think so. I think that we, you know, like, look, in the sports world, it's become so blurred, especially in something like the UFC. Mm-hmm. Look, you have all these guys like John Jones just failed another drug test. Are you kidding me? It's so disappointing to see that. It's really, really bad. But I said it, I said it to my friend, my camera guy, who is a big UFC fan. They should just call it Ultimate Entertainment Championship, because if it's entertainment, like in the movies, they don't care if people use steroids or not. And he said, well, the real fighters would get really mad at that. And I'm like, I know they would, but like, that's the world we live in now.
See, I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it. I wasn't disappointed at all. And people will probably be mad about this too. I wasn't disappointed when Lance Armstrong got outed. The only thing I was disappointed about is that they lied about it.
Yeah.
Right. And the only reason they lied is because the people who made the rules forced them to lie.
I think I'm in the same boat as you, but I still think that like, you shouldn't, you know, but Lance had, you know, sued people and done all these other things.
That was clearly not okay. Sure. And I know one of the guys who's done coaching for me was a Tour de France coach for 9 years. Jeff Spencer has been on the show, a good friend. And I mean, he was heartbroken because he was taking care of Lance and didn't know, right?
Yeah.
And that's one thing. But it actually makes me mad because the science, the learnings that we get from people who put their lives at risk by using supplements like this or hormones, whatever, wouldn't it be nice if they all just said what they were doing and maybe even vetted it with a panel of doctors and shared the data so that all of humanity could learn from these people? Because if they're doing it and no one even benefits and then they die, like, okay, it was entertaining, but like all the knowledge was lost. And if your mission, like, I'm going to kick ass at any cost, and I'm willing to take 5 years off my life. By the way, they did a survey of gold medalists, and almost to a T, they're all like, yeah, of course I would live 5 years less if I can hit the gold medal, because that's what matters most to me. And I'm like, well, we're going to stop you, and you're a 45-year-old competing against 25-year-olds, and you must have old man testosterone instead of 30-year-old testosterone. Like, that's actually, like, that's masochistic.
So I think you're talking, when you say, like, you weren't disappointed, that's I think a different like rule, like a different rule set. Like I'm saying, like if the rule says you can't use steroids and you use steroids, then you broke the rule, right? Yeah. But maybe they should change the rules. I think that's rules, where we got to look at.
The rules are the problem, and it from a sportsman perspective, yes, it's disappointing. But setting up a system where
it's a broken system.
We need to change the rules.
Yeah,
and you know perhaps we do say, look, these substances are so dangerous that, you know, we have a special class. Like, if you're going to use them, like, it's your body. Do whatever the hell you want. And you're going to show up. And then you get the counterpoint. It's like, okay.
Well, we've also found that steroids in certain doses aren't that bad. Like, they're not that negative. But because we forced it into a black market, you can't go to a medical doctor and be like, look, I want to race as fast as I can. I want to take this, and this because it's my body and that's what I want to do. Yeah. You just can't do that. So what is everybody doing? They're just doing it haphazardly. They're not doing it correctly. They don't know what's going on in their body when they take something. And that's, therein lies a problem.
If you wanted to be
a girl,
you get the proper hormones for that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it depends on what your goal is, right?
It's a fair point. And I actually would put all of that in the realm of biohacking. The definition I wrote when I was first coming up with that term, and just building a movement around biohacking is it's the art and science of changing the environment around your body and inside your body so you have full control of your own biology, period. So full control means, you know, you want to change from one gender to another, that's full control. You want to be the most powerful fighter on earth, that's full control. You want to be the strongest, you know, like the strongest man on earth. Look, there's trade-offs on any of these things, yeah. Right? I mean, I want to live to 180 years old and, you know, still be functioning on that age, right? All of those are different goals, and the tool sets are the same, but to just sort of randomly say, you are allowed to pursue your goal, but you're not allowed to use the most powerful tools because someone else might also do that. Like, that just doesn't strike me as what humans do. It never has.
You know, in 1982, Dan Duchesne was the steroid guru in Venice Beach who wrote the Underground Steroid Handbook. And when he wrote that, he said to people, this is a revolution. This is going to change the world. And he truly believed it. He wasn't thinking of I'm a dirty underground drug dealer. He was just thinking, these are all the tools that people need in order to get here. And everybody's going to start using them. So everybody started using steroids because of Dan Duchesne in the Venice area. I actually bought the rights to the book Steroid Nation. I'm making a scripted television show out of this show, Steroid Nation, because I think people need to know this. Dan Duchesne in my treatment for it, in my pitch, it says he was the world's like original biohacker because he was the guy doing it to himself before anybody else, like sort of, I'm sure there's a million people before him too, but in the steroid world, he was sort of the guy, right? He was upset when his revolution his revolution was squashed kind of by like the death of Lyle Alzado and a lot of other things that happened where he's like, you guys were part of the revolution. When Lyle Alzado lied about steroids killing him, like that crushed, you know, Duchesne, that crushed his like, you know, thought of like, this is supposed to be a revolution. These are supposed to be things that can help us, not things that are hurting us. And I think that he also was a little bit twisted and he would take things way too far. And that's where we get into danger and trouble.
Innovators do, but I gotta tell you, you know how many people died learning how to have airplanes? Like thousands of people died learning how to fly.
I was just thinking that when we flew in here because the planes land on the water. I'm like, who's the first guy that did that?
And here's the deal. When you're an innovator, you take risks like that. And you reminded me of this infographic when I was first defining biohacking. I'm like, where does the knowledge come from? Powerlifting, bodybuilding, the radical anti-aging movement, U.S. military special forces, endurance athletes, animal husbandry, like there's a lot of knowledge because you can test on a million cows.
Yeah.
You lose money if you're not doing it right. So there's all these sets of knowledge that have never been brought together. And so absolutely some of the original biohackers out there are he military was more, and bodybuilders.
And he was more of a specific biohacker to like, I'm going to figure out the steroid thing or the hormone thing.
I have control of this aspect of my biology. And he did. I mean, the guy was a wall of muscle.
We had a guy on Mark's podcast the other day, and he was talking about like, oh yeah, Dan Duchesne, Gatorade and bacon diet. And we're like, I don't even want to know how that works. I just don't even want to know. Yeah. I actually tried to Google it and I couldn't find it because afterwards I was interested. But
and the thing is, if your goal is not health, but something else,
right?
It's your life. It's your goal. Absolutely. You're going to do what you're going to do. And that's why I want to ask you
that question. I think we need to be fair, too. Like, when we are helping people or when we're talking, like, look, what's the goal, right? And I think that Mark has taught me that. There's a lot you can learn from people younger than you. My younger brother taught me a lot because he would always say, yeah, but you're missing the point. What's your goal? Like, I'd say, oh, I can't deadlift anymore. He'd be like, who cares, dude? You got to get that out of your head. You're not a powerlifter anymore. You're a great filmmaker. And it took a long time for me to accept that maybe I was good at something besides lifting weights. And that was a personal thing. That was something that like when I was young, I was really good at lifting weights. And it's the only thing that like I was short. I was fat. I wasn't pretty, like all the things. So like when I found lifting, I was the strongest kid in my school. I could bench press 400 pounds raw in high school. Never took a steroid until I was like 28 years old or something like that. So like, I was just way stronger than everybody, and it gave me so much confidence that I think in the end where I got what I actually wanted to be a filmmaker, I didn't care because I couldn't bench 500 pounds. I couldn't, I was like a failure still. Yeah, but my goals changed, but I didn't realize it until later on.
That's what scares me the most about the sort of bigger, stronger, faster perspective is that the decisions you'll make when you're 20 about what matters, your prefrontal cortex finishes 23, 24, and I have a great concern about people who really should have healthy steroid levels like I should have when I was 26, going out there and using steroids and mm-hmm. even some of the more aggressive smart drugs, like, don't do that, because you're going to care about different things. I learned so much running an anti-aging nonprofit group. So here it is, I'm like 30 years old and I become like president of this group, and most of our members are 60 plus. One of my board members is 88 and dating a 35-year-old. And but I'm like, what they care about when they're old, and to a T, you talk to, you know, your elders, and they're like, I really wish I'd have known that when I was younger, because I'm sure. still recovering from the crap I did.
I'm sure you have a lot of people that are like in their 20s that will probably comment on your stuff or say stuff, and it's like, but like, you don't have the same goals, but they think that maybe you do. Like, you know, like, well, he doesn't even lift, bro. You know, like that kind of thing. Or like, it's like, but that's not the goal. The goal isn't to be huge. The goal isn't to live long.
Yeah. And part of my mission with Bulletproof Review is just to be like, look, if someone would have told me all the stuff I know now when I was 20, it would have saved me a lot of effort and a lot of struggle.
Exactly.
So if I can share that knowledge and I can tell you, look, this is a lot of risk. This is going to work with less risk and still get you there. Like, that's the stuff that's the most precious. So I hope.
I think when I was young, I didn't listen to those people. I'd be like, those guys, you know, because we'd always see the old guy in the gym going, I used to bench 500. Like, he would say, I never want to be that guy. And as we're turning into that guy, it's you definitely change your goals. You have to.
You do. And that's the risk
of. Or you'll be miserable.
That's the risk of making short-term decisions about like very powerful steroids or something when you're younger. And that is the counter argument to this, like, let people do what they want. Mm-hmm. It's that it is your body. And if you make really bad decisions in your 20s, whether it's about addiction, whether it's about you ripping your pecs over and over, you do pay for it.
So you're 44?
Yeah.
So am I. So we're right at the same age, right? So when I was younger, though, the goal was always like bigger, stronger, faster. Mm-hmm. Now that I went through addiction and almost died, like, hell yeah, the goal is to live longer. You know, like, it's really, really changed everything that I do. And also, I say sobriety has been the best teacher for me to go on a ketogenic diet or any sort of plan, any program. It doesn't matter what program it was. Learning how to say no to alcohol and drugs when I was so addicted to it. Learning how to just walk away. Learning how to not let that affect my psyche. Learning what caused it and all the things that caused it. You're like, wait, the fact that I'm jealous of somebody might have caused this. The fact that I'm angry about something somebody did when I was like 8 years old to me. But the fact that somebody kicked my ball into the woods is what caused me to be this asshole. Like, I don't want to be that anymore. So you consciously make decisions because we have what? Education, and we have experience.
You nailed it. And I'll tell you right now, all of the trolls on the internet were bullied in high school.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's how it works. The psychology is abundantly clear. And when you just learn your old stories there, if you get pleasure out of that, like, you're getting even with that guy in seventh grade. And a ton of entrepreneurs are also people who were bullied in high school. Like, they're going to get even.
Yeah.
You have the same thing going on with the powerlifting. I'm not going to happen to me. And it's interesting when you switch out of that. You're like, I'm going to do it for another reason. I think that's when the gloves really come off. But we're coming up on the end of the show. And it's been kind of cool to talk about, you know, addiction and making films and steroids and powerlifting. Kind of to go all over the place. Talk about the keto project you guys are working on. So I want to ask you both a question. That is, you know, the Bulletproof standard question. And let's talk Mark first. If someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, based on everything that you know your whole life, I want to perform better as a human being, you know, not just as a powerlifter. What are the three most important pieces of advice you'd have for me? What would you tell them?
Well, man, that's an awesome question. Number one, I would say... something I've learned in the last maybe year is the only thing that you can truly give somebody is information. So I sell products, you sell products, you have a book. But if you share with somebody information that they can actually utilize, they can use that their whole life. You know, a bulletproof bar or a slingshot, you're going to use it for so long, or maybe you won't use it. Maybe you'll forget about it. Maybe it'll sit in your closet, or maybe it'll sit on your gym floor. And you're not going to really use it all the time. But if I give you information or inspire you, then I can help you change your life. So I kind of have a mission of, I always tell people, inspire, don't just instruct. Anyone can instruct. Anyone can learn something and take a weekend course and kind of instruct somebody on better form or better technique for X, Y, or Z. But to really truly inspire somebody to get up off the couch and to start moving and start doing different things.
So you say inspire and inform is your first
one. Yeah, I would say that that's definitely number one. The other thing I would say is personal development. You know, just you need time to yourself. Mm-hmm. You need time to yourself every single day. The most important person in the room is yourself, always. First and foremost, they say, you know, when you're on a plane, they say, you know, to put the mask on before you put it on your child. And that's because if you're debilitated, you can't help your kid. And so if I'm debilitated, I can't help other people. And that's part of the mission right now, is to be able to help and assist other people. So I would say personal development is huge. And for me, personal development means reading books, sitting down, listening to some YouTube videos or listening to some podcasts, going for a walk and just having the music on, or just even sometimes just sitting in silence and doing zero. The third thing that I would recommend to people is, and this is, I think, the most important piece of the puzzle for everybody, is to go home and love your family. If you want to have a big impact on the world, it starts with yourself, making sure you're strong enough to handle the things that you need. But it really starts with your family. If I'm important to somebody in Germany that wants to power lift, that's really cool. And if I help somebody lose 50 pounds that lives in New York, that's also really cool. But the coolest thing of all is to be somebody in the eyes of my kids and the eyes of my wife. So go home and love your family is number three.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. So now it's time to beat your little brother.
Yeah. I think on that same note, what he said, it does have a lot to do with community and family. When I was a drug addict and alcoholic, I was just completely disconnected. Mm. And when I got reconnected with Mark and my girlfriend, Lauren, they're the ones that pulled me out of addiction. You know, so when I reconnected with them and I was like, oh, I really love these people. They talk about being around the five people that you're around. I try to keep working those people into my circles. Like, how many times I hit you up? You know why? Because I mean, that's because we are trying, like, we hit up Joe Rogan all the time. We hit up, like, he talks to Dana White and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, we meet these people. We're like, these are the people we want to be in with. Like, so I'm not bothering them, but, like, I'm just saying, like, I want to.
Now you've been on Bulletproof Radio, you might have a hard time with one of those other things.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Rogan, yeah, yeah. Just, hey, look, people have beefs with each other, right? I try to stay away.
Say my name, baby. Say my name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I feel like having that group of people, right? But for me, it's more like, you know, I have this group of people now. I have my brother. I have my girlfriend. I have my cameraman and his wife are my producing team. Nice. And kind of like that's like the five people that are around me the most. And then I have my friend who's my producer on my movie as well, Kelly. Those are the people that are around me the most that I really have learned to value, like what they're saying and what they're saying about me. Another really big thing that, you know, people say, I'm making this movie. I don't care what anybody thinks of it. Or I'm doing this project. I don't care what anybody thinks. And I don't care what anybody thinks about me. Screw everybody. It's the worst attitude to ever have. All I care about is what people think. The only thing I really care about is when I walk out of this room, what you say about me to other people, because that's the impression that I left on you. If I leave a bad impression, if I leave bad ideas behind, if I leave dumb ideas, if I leave uneducated, stupid sayings or things that, like, I'm just spitting out garbage, you can walk away and be like, that guy, Chris Bell, is so full of shit. But if I come in here and my passion can influence you in a way or make you think in a different way, or maybe I ask a challenging question, it's like I leave and go, those guys were pretty cool. That was fun, you know? I look for that, you know? And then I think, like, the third thing comes from our friend The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Always be the hardest working guy in the room. You know, that there's nothing. There's, you are proof of that. Mark is proof of that. I am starting a little bit back because I had a drug and alcohol problem that I've since been able to conquer. People say that you can't conquer it, that you never conquer it. I think that's a lie. I'm done with it. It's done. It's gone. If it comes back, it comes back, but it's gone for now. So why relish in it, right? So I think, you know, always be the hardest working person around. And I've learned that that's been something in the past 6 months. It's just, for me, the workload. I've been giving myself a bigger workload. I've been trying to take on more responsibility because I want to get to that point where I'm just so busy that nobody can get in touch with me like you guys.
You might get what you asked for. Be careful.
I never know.
Last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you're allocating your time in a way that that gives you energy and you're busy, it's amazing.
I should say the biggest gift I've ever been given is this talent that I have I believe I've been just given it, like, to make films, to influence people with the media that we have, because I just think media is so powerful. And I just think my brother's wife, Andy, her mom came to me crying and said, after I got out of rehab, I'm going to cry saying it. She said, don't lose that gift.
Nice.
You almost lost it. Don't lose that gift. And I'm like, man, that is so powerful. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to look for. You have a gift. He has a gift.
So we can't schedule that. Schedule yourself with your gift, not with trivial crap. And that's a mistake I've certainly made. So.
What do you mean by trivial crap?
What's important? Well, if you have, 16 hours in the day you're going to schedule, let's say, assuming you sleep a normal amount, you schedule time for your family. You schedule time to take care of your hardware, the stuff we were just talking about, right? And you schedule every other minute doing the stuff that gives you the most energy, that creates the most value. But if you schedule it to wash your socks, you schedule it to do your dishes, to go grocery shopping, those are all things that have to get done, that are valuable to get done, and that you will go do if you're the only one who can do it, right? And that's the case for a lot of us. But if you're fortunate enough to have people in your life who can support you that way while you make a film, then you go work hard on a film. Don't work hard on stuff that's not your gift. That's what I'm saying.
Amazing.
So yeah. I don't normally give feedback.
No, thank you. Advice, I appreciate
when
it.
When I hear you say that you want to be that busy, never be that busy.
Yeah, no,
unless
I'm saying,
with your gift.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I want to be busy. I keep telling him, all I want to do is keep making movies, keep making content, keep educating people and learning myself, you know?
Yeah, so don't lose that gift and use it to its fullest. That's an awesome one. All right, guys, one more question for you. Real simple one. I guess we need two different URLs. Where can people find out more about your work? Let's start with you, Mark.
Oh, just tell people where I'm at, basically?
Yeah, just how can they find you? People hear you now, they're like, I want to know more from this guy. Where do they go?
Instagram, I'm at Mark Smilly Bell. Twitter, same, at Mark Smilly Bell. And then you can check out all my products at howmuchyoubench.net. You can also check out my YouTube, youtube.com/supertraining06, or just Google supertraining06 and it will pop up. Thousands and thousands of instructional, informative videos. So go check all that out.
And we'll put all the links in the show notes for you. So you go to the blog, this will all be categorized for you.
Sure.
All right, and let's talk about some film URLs.
Yeah, sure. People can find me at Big Strong Fast. Four of my films. One of my actually was just an executive producer. So there's Bigger, Stronger, Faster, which is about steroids, basically. Mm-hmm. And steroids in the American dream, I would say. Yep. Trophy Kids, which is about, how to not parent your kid through sports. That was on HBO. I actually did that with Peter Berg, and that's actually available on Netflix also. And then Prescription Thugs, which really covers the opiate epidemic. Mm-hmm. And then because of Prescription Thugs, I also executive produced a movie called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake that's available on Netflix, which I just thought was an awesome project about the former WWE wrestler Jake the Snake, who became a crack addict, and this is sort of his recovery story.
Wow.
And it's a great movie.
Coming up in January or February around that, I have a new film called A Leaf of Faith. When I made Prescription Thugs, there was no answer in sight for the opiate epidemic, but I found it. It's called Kratom. It's a plant, comes from Southeast Asia, takes people out of pain, gets people off of opiates, and does all sorts of great stuff. And so we're going to basically be exploring that. And the film, we just finished it, and so we're just sort of figuring out how to place it and what to do with it.
I hear questions online on my social channels and all pretty often about Kratom. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see that film. I've tried the stuff you gave me. It's interesting stuff. So with
the amount of knowledge and the amount of, with this journey that I went on, I think people will be really shocked with what we've come up with.
Very, very cool. Well, guys, thanks for being on Bulletproof Radio. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Yeah, awesome.
Great.
If you liked today's episode, you know what to do. Head on over to bulletproof.com/iTunes. It'll take you right to the link for this page, and you can just give us a 5-star rating. That tells everyone else on YouTube that the show was worth your time to listen to today. And that's the bar that's set here, because if we waste your time in the last hour of your time, I have no idea how many people are going to listen to this, hundreds of thousands of people. That's hundreds of thousands of lost hours of human life or improved hours of human life. So if we're crossing that bar, leave a rating. I'd be grateful. And check out the work from both of these guys. It's worth your time. Thank you.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.